couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Valley Girl and Arkansas. I'm also going to be talking about some new TV series Trying and Solar Opposites, as well as the controversial first part of the new film Plandemic. More on that later. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Riff Track's excursion into suburban Sasquatch territory. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news actually is a couple weeks old, but I actually was brought into thinking about this week when I got contacted by a listener. The James Bond film, No Time to Die, of course, was famously supposed to have already come out. It was supposed to come out at the beginning of April. Didn't happen due to the coronavirus pandemic, and it got moved into the November timeframe. Hopefully, we'll be available to watch that then, but there was a little piece of news that kind of trickled out, and it was that the director originally wanted the story to all take place in James Bond's mind. Essentially go through this adventure, and then at the end, it be all in his head. And I remember reading that and thinking, oh my God, that would have been the worst ending since Inception. Because here's the thing. The idea of a story taking place in someone's mind, either as a dream or as a thought or something like that, is not a new idea. Okay, fine. When Wizard of Oz came out in 1939, more than 80 years ago, that was acceptable because you hadn't done a whole lot of filmed entertainment by then. But nowadays, that's the biggest cliche there is. That is literally a bigger cliche than probably anything else you could do. And I remember when I was writing science fiction stories and horror stories back in the 90s, you would get these writer's guidelines that said, do not have the ending be it was all a dream. Do not have it all happening in the character's mind. That is an old, crappy, Twilight Zone-esque television series idea. It was old then. It's old now. Do not do it. And yet we still have these filmmakers coming out there thinking, oh, isn't this clever? I'm Christopher Nolan. Was it a dream or was it real? I don't know. Aren't I genius? No, you're not. That is a big cliche. And that's one of the things I ranted about this to this guy who contacted me. He actually contacted me because I referenced Inception in a previous show. And he's like, what was your review of Inception? And I never really addressed this when I reviewed Inception, but you know, doggone it, it's been out for 10 years. If you don't know, that's how it ends with this. Is it all a dream or not? When that came out, there are so many people like, oh, that's brilliant. No, it's not. It's been done a billion times before. And the reality is Christopher Nolan does fall into cliche all the time. The end of The Dark Knight Rises was a ticking clock. The end of Batman Begins was Commissioner Gordon driving the Batmobile. You know, even the stuff that happened in Interstellar, that's like all cliche stuff. That's been done time and time and time again. There's nothing original about what you saw in Interstellar. So that was just something I thought I'd bring up. And, you know, that's one of the things that I've always had an issue with Christopher Nolan. Now, speaking of Christopher Nolan, this dovetails into another piece of news, and that I was reading this article, Variety has an article this week, about how Christopher Nolan is hoping to still be able to bring Tenet to theaters in July, July 17th to be specific. Is Christopher Nolan going to reinvent cinema? Is Christopher Nolan going to be the reason we can go to the movies again? Okay, spoiler alert, he won't be. Here's the thing. I know Christopher Nolan has been wanting to keep this date. And I think he wants to keep this date because he wants to move on to other projects. If he's going to have to delay this for 6 months or a year, it's just going to put his whole schedule out of whack. And I think that's part of the reason why he wants to get it to cinemas. But the idea that movie theaters are going to be open this summer in normal capacity is insane. It's not going to happen. I know there are some places that are opening theaters now. Drive-in's a different story. But inside the theater, they're talking about putting a plexiglass and social distancing and all that kind of elements and taking people's temperatures. And so the people who want to go back to the cinemas are going to be annoyed because it's not going to be the same experience. And the people who are all afraid of government oversight aren't going to want to get their temperature taken so they can go into the cinema. this isn't going to work. And I've talked about at length why at 20% capacity, this is not going to work. Also add to the fact that when a secondary surge comes in June, and it's going to come, there's going to be a massive secondary surge in June. Just look at anything that anyone who knows anything about pandemics, I mean, I'm not talking about, don't look at what politicians are saying or what economists are saying or what business leaders are saying or anyone like that. Look at what the experts in pandemics and epidemics and infectious disease are saying. They're saying, all saying, if you lift these restrictions, huge second surge. So if you get a second surge in June, they're going to shut down cinemas again. And that's just going to be longer that we have that we're going to be suffering. And there's going to be more suffering for the movie industry because you can't release your movies. It's like I had a friend point an article on Facebook. He's a big fan of amusement parks. I love amusement parks, and it's talking about amusement parks trying to reopen. And I'm like, look, I love taking my kid to the amusement park in the summer, but I'm not going to step foot in the parking lot because these people can't even enforce smoking policies in the amusement parks. The same thing with movie theaters. Have you ever tried to get somebody to actually shut up or turn off their phone in a movie? Have you ever gone and tried to get Usher or anyone who works there to do it? You're going to miss 5 minutes of the movie trying to track somebody down. And even if they do, they take so long to get there. And then they never say anything. I literally saw somebody videotaping the movie. It took me forever to get somebody to come in there. And even then, they just sort of watched to make sure they didn't do it again. Also, if you look at how diseases are transmitted in a small room with a bunch of people with a circular air conditioning that keeps running around, that's just a breeding ground for it. Plus, they said, oh, everyone's going to have a mask on. Well, how are you going to eat popcorn if you have a mask? Because the only way the movie theaters are going to make money is to sell popcorn. It's insane. Mark my word. I hope I'm wrong about this, but Tenet is not going to come out in July. We'll be lucky to get anything in theaters by September at this rate with the secondary surge. And I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be a bummer, but I'm just trying to be realistic. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is called Becky. It's actually getting a VOD release on June 5th through Redbox.
Jeff, this gentleman lost his dog.
Okay, well, why don't you give us your number?
My dog is a Rottweiler. Purebred. That's why you never let them mate with other breeds. You get the worst of both.
Okay, I think it's time for you to go.
Stay calm. I'm looking for a key. You seen it?
No.
Well, that leaves little Becky. Where's Becky?
Wait.
He's going to hold your dad still while I hurt him.
I'm not going to let them get away with this.
This is a home invasion thriller. It actually gives Kevin James a chance to act and stretch, which I think is good because I think the guy is a good actor. He's got that knack for comedy. He's known for comedy. This will give him a chance to maybe break out a little bit. The only thing that worries me about this movie that it's going to be, I don't like watching a movie where just awful things happen to people. You know, the torture and the attacks and the murdering of somebody in front of somebody they love. That looks like this is where this is going, and I don't like seeing that. It's unappealing to me. I'm sorry. It's just not something I get into. I mean, yeah, sure, if there's a revenge element, that stuff's cool. But yeah, I don't like watching bad things happen to decent people. The other one I want to hit really quickly is Lovecraft Country. It's coming onto HBO in August.
Uncle George, the reason I'm back home. My father, he's gone missing.
1, 2, 3!
He wrote me. The place he wants me to go is in Lovecraft Country.
1, 2, 3!
This place.
1, 2, 3!
It's dangerous.
I haven't even gotten to the real strange part.
This actually looks really interesting. It's a Jordan Peele produced show, and it does deal with racial tensions and has a racial element to it, which is totally cool. And that's obviously, that's Jordan Peele's thing, you know, pulling in these racial stories into sometimes some older, ideas of horror films. And, it certainly has an element of Lovecraft to it. If you watch, you can hear the screaming and the monsters. And when you watch the trailer, there's monsters and weird stuff happening. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Arkansas and Solar Opposites. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the reviews with a new film. This is, this is technically this might fall into the home cinema roundup. Originally, this movie, Arkansas, which I'm talking about here, I just want to give you a quick history. It was supposed to come out on May 1st in theaters. It was a South by Southwest Film Festival entry, and I don't think it was one of those that may have missed the festival, because the festival got shut down because of COVID-19. So Arkansas was supposed to come out on May 1st, but then they decided to pivot to a full VOD release. And I think it was originally supposed to come out on May 1st, and then they were going to have a DVD release just a couple days later on that next Tuesday, which was May 5th. But now they just said they're just going to do the VOD release on May 12th. I already had it slated. I already had a screener, so I figured I'd just put it in there as one of the new movies because, hey, what else are you going to be doing at home? You know, I mean, we're still a couple days away from some places that are opening up, even though they shouldn't. It's a little too premature. But anyways, I digress. Let's talk about Arkansas. Liam Hemsworth and Clark Duke star as drug dealers in the South who double-cross their bosses.
What a lot of people don't know about organized crime in the South is that it's not that organized. I'm near the bottom rung of an outfit run by a man I've never met before, a man named Frog.
I'm the boss. You may never refuse an order, and you may never quit.
Pat Bright, Park Ranger. I'm with Frog. I've been ordered to intervene. Do not socialize with the locals. Do not draw attention to yourself.
If you boys catch yourself starting to complain about boredom, just remember, a bored criminal is a good criminal.
Of course, Liam Hemsworth is better known as the Army Hammer of the Hemsworth brothers. He is the less than charismatic one of the top two, I guess. You know, you have Chris Hemsworth, who struggles at times outside of the Thor characters, outside of his big names. He still struggles. But I think Chris Hemsworth works. He's more of a movie star. Liam Hemsworth feels like he's the I used to date Miley Cyrus character, which is exactly who he is. Sure, he was in Hunger Games. Yeah, he was in one of the Expendables movies. But if you put Hemsworth on a marquee, you're expecting Chris Hemsworth. I have a feeling. If I said to my wife, I said, guess what? For your birthday, I got a Hemsworth to come in here and take his shirt off for you. And if it was Liam instead of Chris, my wife may not have had a very good birthday then. So anyways, Liam Hemsworth is always going to be living in the shadow of his brother. And he just doesn't have the chops the same amount that Chris does. Not that Chris is a great actor, but I think they're very different. At least he's better than his other brothers, who I don't even know their names. Clark Duke actually directs this movie, and that's part of the problem. It's an okay sort of bumbling criminals type of film. I've heard people compare it to stuff like Fargo in terms of what it wanted to be, where you have these criminals that aren't as smart as they really should be, or compare it to a Quentin Tarantino movie where it puts these chapters in there and it has these monologues that the characters have. The thing is, Clark Duke is not the Coen brothers, nor is he Quentin Tarantino. It's his first directorial debut. He probably should have, A, gone for something that was trying to be less and not trying to kind of tilt at these windmills, but he also should not have taken a starring role in it. It's hard enough to act and it's hard enough to direct. It's very difficult to do both. And you have exceptional filmmakers that have been able to do that over the years, but they are rare. And even when you look at somebody like Mel Gibson, I know you're not supposed to talk about Mel Gibson anymore, but he is a very talented actor and director, and he has done both in the same movie, like Braveheart, but a lot of times he will not direct himself in a movie. You know, when he did like The Passion of the Christ, he didn't put himself in that movie. He had enough to worry about that he didn't have to put on two different hats, because that's tough. So anyways, the two of them, they don't have much chemistry. You've got John Malkovich in there, and he's actually very funny, and you also have Vince Vaughn, who's kind of funny as well, but he writes these long monologues that Vince Vaughn's supposed to give, and you know, after about the second one, you're just like, okay, shut up. This just doesn't work, and it's a little bit convoluted and a little hard to follow, and at a certain point, there's a thing at the end where you're like, oh, this person's going after this person. You're like, I don't even know who I really want to win. I honestly would be okay if they both parties walked away or both parties got killed. And that's not what you want to set up your audience with in a movie. So anyways, Arkansas, it's a good swing and it's maybe, you know, it'll get you on base, but it certainly isn't a home run. So I'm going to have to say Arkansas kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about a new TV series. Again, you know, like I'm trying to do for anyone, and even if your state is opening up or slowly easing the restrictions, I want to provide people with ideas of what to watch because a lot of people are still at home and there's a lot of time to fill. And Solar Opposites is a TV series. It's on Hulu, so I like to cover some of that stuff as well. And this is a brand new series from the co-creator of Rick and Morty. This animated series follows a family of aliens trying to survive in suburbia.
That feels like I'm the only Slurpian who wants to escape this planet.
What up? We're aliens.
Make room at the table. You know, Terry, everyone in the neighborhood hates us.
You boys want some peanut butter cookie?
Oh, she's threatening us. I'm freaking out.
Why are you dissecting your classmate?
She was mean to us at school.
We can make people like us.
We may be trapped on this world, on the brink of mass extinction, plagued by a species that destroys the environment, but at least we have each other.
It's very hard for me to watch this and not sort of think of Seth MacFarlane. And a lot of it's the animation style. It has a very American Dad animation style, which I realize American Dad and Family Guy and The Cleveland Show all kind of are cut from the same cloth and have their own animation style. But there's something a little bit more tall and thin with the American Dad angle. I never had watched Rick and Morty leading up to this. I went ahead and watched a couple episodes of Rick and Morty just to kind of see what the deal is. And it certainly feels like a Rick and Morty show. We have swearing in it and it's obnoxious and raunchiness and you have it. And it also, the thing it does that Rick and Morty does, which is more than the Seth MacFarlane block, is it's out there. Rick and Morty, they're going into different dimensions in the first episode. And while it does devolve at a certain point into burping and fart jokes, this one feels like it could fall in the same way. But it is that sort of takeoff on the suburban sitcom, and it's got obnoxious characters and these aliens, and they have some very funny moments. But it's out there again, very similar to how Rick and Morty hits the ground running and does not stay grounded in the least. This one also does not stay grounded. And it's funny. I have to say, I did enjoy it. It's a little shocking at times because I'm just not used to watching too much adult cartoons that, when they're dropping F-bombs and that sort of thing. But I mean, if you look at like the spectrum, if you were to say, you know, like Paw Patrol is the nicest, friendliest, fluffiest version of animation. And let's just say Big Mouth on Netflix is the most extreme. This is way up there in the extreme. But it is grounded in like more real stories. Whereas like something like Big Mouth, if you've ever watched that on Netflix, that is nothing but sex and grossness and inappropriate stuff. That's the entirety of the series. Whereas Rick and Morty, they swerve into that a lot. And it, in a lot of ways, it's also their platform from which they're leaping. I have to say, I thought it was funny. Again, if you like adult animation blocks, and when I say adult animation, I'm not talking about like, you know, Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse in After Dark. I'm talking about just, you know, stuff that's for adults. Do not show this to your kids because they will pick up stuff that you do not want them to pick up. But anyways, I gotta say, I enjoyed Solar Opposites. I'll probably continue to watch it. All 8 episodes are available now on Hulu. And I'm gonna have to say it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm gonna be talking about Valley Girl and Trying. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into more movie reviews. This is another one that's new, actually. And this was supposed to come out this weekend, I believe. I think it was going to get a wide release. This was not just some little piddly movie or some festival favorite that just pivoted onto on-demand without worrying about a theatrical. This one was going to come out in theaters, and it was meant to be a major motion picture. So, I mean, it's not like Trolls, where Trolls was this massive motion picture. But it certainly was one that they, I think they were going to give it the good run in the movie houses, not just on demand. And that is Valley Girl. A high school senior from the San Fernando Valley in the early 80s falls in love with a punk rocker from Hollywood.
Let me get out of here.
Where would you want to go?
Anywhere.
What would you want to do?
Anything.
He's bad news. We don't date guys like that.
Maybe that's good for a change.
Why are you doing this? Those rich people are gonna hate you.
I'm just going to put this out there first. I remember when I talked about this as a trailer park a couple weeks ago. I do have to point out that they have Alicia Silverstone playing the adult version of this girl. And now this movie was, I think, supposed to come out 2 years ago, but one of the actors in it, and his name's escaping me right now because he's an insignificant nobody. He's a YouTuber who went into the suicide forest in Japan and like took pictures of a guy, his dead body hanging there. And it really was a shameful thing to do because, you know, in America, the suicide forest is seen as almost a horror movie element. In Japan, it's a much more somber place. It's a place people go to find peace through suicide, which is not the best way to do it, but it's not a horror movie location in Japan. It's culturally something very different. And so he got in a lot of trouble for that, and then they had to just postpone the release of this. But even 2 years later, this is taking place in like 1983, which is when the original movie came out, the one with Deborah Foreman and Nicolas Cage. And Alicia Silverstone, my God, I mean, I was too young in 1983 to have been a high school senior, and certainly Alicia Silverstone, who's like six, seven years younger than me, is too young. This movie ignores math when it comes to a woman who's supposed to be in her early 50s. My God, let's have a little bit of realism here. But once you get past the bad math, this is actually a charming little movie. And again, you've got Jessica Routh playing the main character. And she's only, I think, 11 years younger than Alicia Silverstone. I mean, she is like 32 and she's playing a 17. I mean, she's literally playing half her age. But that's because she looks young and she can kind of pull that off. She's best known for having been in the Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day 2 series. She's cute and I think she's adorable. I think she's one of those on her way up actresses who has yet to break out into the full mainstream role. She's the Reese Witherspoon of tomorrow, and she hasn't gotten that breakout role yet. But she is very good in the movie. The only problem is that she doesn't quite... I mean, she looks like the pretty rich girl, but she doesn't quite have, like, the Valley Girl accent, you know? And I'm not doing it well either, but at least I recognize that. I'm not getting a role in a movie called Valley Girl. It's also a jukebox musical. It's got all these production numbers where they're singing songs from the 80s, everything from Cyndi Lauper to The Cars. You know, they sing Girls Just Want to Have Fun, and they sing We Got the Beat by the Go-Go's, and they sing a bunch of different songs famous in the 80s and have these big production numbers. And, you know, doggone it, if this movie doesn't suck me in. I thought it was a charming, sweet little film. I was honestly surprised. I was rolling my eyes, not ready to watch it. Because I remember seeing the original Valley Girl in the 80s. I saw it on VHS probably, you know, 86, 87, you know, 4 or 5 years after it came out. But I remember thinking that movie was just kind of a fun little sweet little film. And this one kind of fits that same mold. It's really cute and charming and sweet. There's a real doggone it if that's not just an American love story type of element to it. And we've seen this story a billion times before. The rich girl falls in love with the guy from the other side of the tracks. Only in this one, she's in the valley and he's on the other side of the Hollywood Hills. But it works. And the two of them, they really have a good chemistry together. And it's a cute little charming thing. And it also has a certain dose of realism to it where it's like, you know, this may not last forever. But, you know, you're young and stupid once. Fall in love. Do crazy thing. Have some time. And there's some neat little cameos. If you've seen the original movie, you'll recognize the cameos. So, yeah, I was very pleasantly surprised with Valley Girl. I would have to say, you know, of all the new movies, if you want to say the movies this week, it's probably my favorite. Go figure. I mean, gag me with a spoon. I gotta say, Valley Girl totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next item I want to talk about is Trying. This is actually a television series, and it's on Apple TV+. A couple in the UK try to get pregnant but have to resort to applying for adoption when they discover they are infertile.
You don't have kids?
We have actually been trying for kids for a while now.
With your complications, conceiving is very unlikely.
So what do we do now?
A small piece of us dies and we just carry on with whatever's left.
All right. Well, as long as we've got a plan.
I think I'm ready to talk about adopting.
It's a scary business. My kids are vampires that suck every ounce of energy out of me until I'm nothing but an empty carcass.
Other than that, you all right?
Yeah.
Rafe Spall plays the main guy in this, and usually you see him in more sinister roles. I think people would most recognize him as he was in that the Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, that sequel, and he was the guy who was trying to manipulate his grandfather and sell all the dinosaurs. He was also in, and I can't remember what it was, but it was this horror film that was on Netflix a couple years ago where people go hunting and they get caught into this sort of, I think it was like this Nordic mythical thing, this monster in the woods that attacked him. But he usually plays a darker person in the stuff I've seen him in the mainstream stuff, but he actually plays just more or less just kind of a everyday bloke in this thing as a British guy. And he's really good because he's able to give that dry approach to the story and the humor in this. And that's what really works. Also, a plain opposite of him is Esther Smith, and she's best known for, there's a TV series on Netflix that's a British show with Greg Davies, but she plays the daughter in it who marries this kind of crazy man. She's the one who replaced the girl in the first season. So if you've seen Cuckoo, she's in the last, in seasons two through however many there were. And she is just charming as all get out. She's adorkable. She is that adorkable character, but it doesn't look, it's not like she's trying, and they're not shoving that down your throat. And you just, there's an authenticity to her, and she is sweet and lovable. And you kind of just want to say, yeah, I mean, you know, you could do a lot worse with how dry the bloke is in this relationship. But I have to say again, this one's very charming. I was surprised. I'd like to see and compare it to Breeders, which is on FX, starring Martin Freeman, who's also British. I've never watched that. I have a feeling that that's a little more dark and has a greater edge, partly because it's on FX. I mean, it is on Hulu. I could watch it, but I just never got around to it. But Trying feels like that modern response to not just dealing with potentially being a parent, but dealing with the world telling you needed to be a parent. I mean, there's a lot that people go through at that age. You have people who want to have kids, but then they can't. And you have people who don't want to have kids, but then they get pregnant. And you also have people who want kids who are able to have kids. And for the people who want kids but can't, that there's a great envy there. And I've known people over the years, they're having trouble conceiving, so they'll be like, well, we whatever happens, they kind of blow it off a little bit more, but in reality, it really does cut them down to their soul, and they so want to be a parent, and all that time, their friends are saying, oh my God, like in the trailer, my kids are vampires, and they suck all this energy out of them, but they're like, yeah, but I want that, and as a parent, it's very challenging, but it's also very rewarding, and I would never go and not be a parent. But I will admit that my life is very different because of it. And that's what these people are discovering. And they work well together. So, yeah, I'm going to have to say Trying totally rocks as well.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Plandemic and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Riff Trax's Suburban Sasquatch. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Look, I don't get involved that much in current events. I don't get involved in politics. And I do that very specifically because if you want politics on the radio, you want current events, you got plenty of it. But there are times, and I've said this before, where the current events or politics intersect with the entertainment or movie world, sometimes spectacularly. And at that point, I have to comment on it. And I feel to be a good citizen, not just of America, but a citizen of the world, that this is something that needs to be commented on. There is a film out there called Plandemic. And it's been put up on YouTube, and it's been taken down multiple times by YouTube because it goes against their terms and conditions, basically saying it's misinformation. And that's true. I mean, you can certainly fall behind that. I do think it's kind of interesting that you can find tons and tons and tons of anti-vaccine stuff and tons of flat earth nonsense. But I think they realize that there's no day-to-day human danger of somebody thinking that the earth is flat. But with something like Plandemic, in the middle of a pandemic that's currently going on, that can be seen as very dangerous propaganda and misinformation. The reason I'm approaching it now is because I've not seen it on other people's pages, but I've heard a lot of people that I know are seeing it crop up all over the place. It has gained steam. And I said, you know what? I think this is a good time for me. I'm going to look at it as a film, as a persuasive piece of information. I'm going to just point out here, it's nonsense, okay? Most of what's talked about in the first 25 minutes of this is absolute total hogwash. And if you don't believe me, there are plenty of people out there debunking this constantly. Just search Plandemic with an L, Plandemic debunking, or Plandemic responses, and you're going to see intelligent, professional people who work in medicine and people who work in epidemiology will go through and explain all the logical problems and all the things that are wrong with it. But just as a piece of persuasive filmmaking, I want to address it. It's a documentary, so it's an interview, essentially. It's about a molecular biologist who dives into several related conspiracies about medical advice in America and the current coronavirus pandemic. Now, I don't have a trailer for it, and I probably wouldn't play one if I did. I'm not trying to publicize this because it is propaganda and it is nonsense. I've had my fair share of times playing around with conspiracy theories. Back in the 90s when I wrote science fiction and horror stories and I published in several magazines, I started writing an article series called Surreal World. And it had everything from the Montauk Project to the Roswell crash to Men in Black. And it was a fun little lark of a series I wrote for this semi-pro zine called Pirate Writings. That was when The X-Files was a big deal. But at that time, this stuff was still very fringe. The problem is now, a lot of these fringe conspiracy theories, and a lot of this is due to the internet giving everybody credibility. I mean, you can make a movie about anything, and you can post it on YouTube, and that's essentially what this guy did. But when you break it down as a persuasive film, this is propaganda for this woman, and she is, in fact, a molecular biologist, but she's been discredited. If you do any sort of cursory research into her background, her scholarly articles, a lot of them have been retracted because they couldn't reproduce what she did. She is somebody who is well known in the anti-vaccine movement. Her name's Judy Mikovits, and they profile her. Now, as a film, this movie falls apart within the first minute. Part of the reason is the guy who's doing the interviewing, he says he's a father/filmmaker, but he only has one M in there, so he doesn't even know how to spell. But he's interviewing her, and she's basically just telling stories. She's like, well, I used to work with Dr. Fauci, and he came in and stole my research and gave it to this other guy and let all these people die from AIDS so that they could publish later without a shred of evidence. I mean, at no point did she sit there and say, okay, here's all the patents that they got from it. You can look at their names here, and here's this stuff that I had, and here's the date of when I did this stuff, and look, I had found those patents. Or, hey, look, here's something that I mailed to myself back when they stole the paper. I made another copy, and I mailed it to myself 2 years before they published, and look, it's the exact same thing. No, none of that. She talks about saying, I'm getting arrested. The police come into my house with no warrant, and there's no charge, yet she's arrested. And they're searching her house. Well, if you do any research, you find out she was, in fact, had stolen stuff from her previous job where she had gotten fired. But I think either fired or she'd been let go. I don't know the situation on that. But she had, because if she were arrested with, there's no like paperwork. She doesn't come out and say, yeah, look, see, I was arrested. Here's my discharge papers, but they have no charge written down here. You know, then there's no evidence of anything she says. And then a lot of this is just her trying to kind of build, it's her being opportunistic and trying to build a case for herself as a public figure now. And then kind of about the halfway through, it starts to lean into the coronavirus. And then, of course, they show those two emergency room doctors who are telling you that you shouldn't have to wear a mask. And in fact, if you shelter in place for more than a couple of weeks, you're going to lose your immune system. All of that is absolute nonsense. Again, this stuff has been thoroughly debunked and thoroughly refuted by reputable scientists. So these people are absolute bonkers. And then they ask her, well, are you anti-vaccine? She's like, no, I am for vaccines, but she's one of the most well-known anti-vax doctors out there. She comes up with these crazy things where she says that if you have the mask, you put the mask on and you breathe out particles of the virus, then the virus is going to get back in you and infect you, which I don't know how you're breathing it out and not infect. I don't know how any of that works. She offers no explanation, no resources, no references, and no proof whatsoever for all of her insane things she says. She makes all these claims about that, what the hydroquinine, that malaria drug, that's absolutely not true. She makes claims about flu vaccines are supposed to all have coronaviruses. That's also not true. There's so much that's not true. Yet you shoot it with a nice camera and you edit it together nicely and you hit the right hot buttons. Because the reality is, in this pandemic that we're in right now, unless you live across the street from a hospital, it is very deceptive. It's been just a string of nice weather all week here in Ohio. You don't have people dying on the streets. You don't have zombies eating each other. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. All the horrible stuff's happening when people get sick and stay at home and then call 911 and go to the hospital. And so you look around and all the healthy people look fine, but that's the deceptive thing about this. So stay safe, people. I think it's fine to watch conspiracy theory stuff because it can be fun, but please don't take that crap seriously. This stuff is misinformation and disinformation, and it's usually done by somebody who's trying to profit off of great suffering, which is exactly what these troglodytic ghouls are doing. So Plandemic totally sucks. I've only seen the first part of it, and I'm not going to watch anymore.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week, I want to talk really quickly about Riff Trax, Suburban Sasquatch. I've done enough of like DVD releases and Blu-ray releases. I want to talk about something a little bit different. And this is a direct-to-download. You can buy it. It's like $10 from rifftrax.com. And it's a movie from 2004, and they've done a new riff on it. So Mike, Kevin, and Bill make fun of the 2004 video film about a reporter and inept sheriff's deputies who are trying to track down a Bigfoot who randomly dismembers and eats citizens of a not-quite-suburban town.
What if I tell you I can get you a story you want to read?
You want your prize? Then help me get mine.
I saw.
One way or another, people will hear.
He's gone.
Fate is something no one can change.
Are you all right?
We can't get out. Just try.
And I just don't understand. Why can't we open up this case? Get some help. Alert people.
Leave it be.
It's one of those movies that's so poorly put together. It's shot on video. The actors are clearly the guy's buddies who's directing. I think the director's one of the actors in it. And it's very poorly written. It is a bad film, but it's so bad at times it's absurd. Now, the way I define a good bad film, it needs to be something that people really put their heart and soul into. And it came out terrible. Something like The Room. If you've seen The Room, people are dying on camera trying to make this the best movie ever. And they fail. I don't want to see something that was just poorly done. I want something where they really, really tried and it becomes hilarious in its approach. And Suburban Sasquatch does that. Not only the fact that there's nowhere near a suburb. It's kind of this small sort of country town that they're in. The effects are terrible. The nipples on the suit are grotesque and bizarre. I mean, on a like an Anna Nicole Smith level, and digital blood comes spurting out. It is so insane. It's horrible to watch, but it's only like 75 minutes long. With Riff Trax guys, it's very funny. Totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Other releases this week is Bloodshot, which was the last movie I ever saw in a theater so far. The Lodge, Gretel and Hansel, the rhythm section, the Jesus roles, I Still Believe, Greed, and Doctor Who, the complete 12th season. And that is it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Scoob, Proximity, and Capone. Until then, have a fat time at the movies and at home.